the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too.
Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
All right, welcome into another episode. Oh, my God. Justin, shut up.
Sorry. I've never done that. That's the first time I've ever done that.
You're a nightmare today. Good God. All right, welcome into another episode of Armchair Sports Talk. As always, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That's Justin Marcus. That's Russ Ivanek. We're going to talk about a lot today, and I think that we're going to go all across the map. It's all sports all the time with us, but some of these are good, some of these are bad, and I want to say it right now. I went completely, almost perfectly off that list that Jay sent us today of NHL awards. Last week I wrote them down, and they're almost verbatim on here. I may have changed one or two just to mix it up a little bit, but other than that, they're all about the same. We are going to talk, golf's coming back here soon. Obviously, NHL awards, since the NHL has officially announced its season's over, they're moving on to the playoffs. NBA has decided they want to do it a little bit different, and I don't understand why. And then we're going to sum it all up, a little best of topic that's been on the list for a while that I want to get these guys' opinions on. So, kicking it off, first I will say hello to Justin Marcus.
What's happening, buddy? I'll try not to get kicked off the pod today. I promise you that.
Do your best, do your best. I know you're going to try real hard. And Statman Russ Ivanek?
Hey, I'm here, and let's see how this goes.
Can't go any worse. It really can't. We cannot be any worse than we are. So
optimism to start it off. All right.
If you set the bar super low, all you can do is go up from there.
Hey, that's my theory on life.
Hey, it's okay. We'll make it work. All right, so first off, PGA Tour is coming back next weekend. I know Jay and I are very excited about that. But, and I don't really get why they didn't wait a little longer, the John Deere Classic has announced that it's canceling the tournament due to COVID restrictions. One, Jay, how tough is this for you? Because I know we just want as much golf as we can get our hands on right now.
Dude, any golf would be great right now, but it makes sense. If they don't have proper things in place, no one can't open up. Not to mention that, you know, wherever these events are being held, whether it's a major or if it's just a tournament weekend, you're subject to whatever state you're playing in. So it's just ticky-tacky. It's necessary, but with some of the news today, it looks like we have golf on the horizon.
We have golf on the horizon. You and I have golf very, very soon on the horizon. You better have golf.
About 12 hours from now,
we've got golf on the horizon. We are good to go. Justin and I are going to play. Justin
like,
and I.
At like 6 in the morning?
Yeah. We're doing it nice and early. Eric's working till 4 in the morning and then teeing off at 6. No, not even a little bit. We're playing at noon. I am
sleeping.
Your
math is awful then.
Yeah, not my math. That's
why you're here.
Yeah, say, that's why he's not the stat man. I will go to Russ on this. I do want to ask you this, Russ, because this has been my little hypothesis through all this. If you're the NBA, if you're the NHL, if you're the Major League Baseball, NFL, whatever you want to pick, shout out to that Korean Baseball League, saving my life right now by giving me something to watch. Kia Tigers till I die. Kia Tigers all the way. I think they're like less than 500 right now, but Kia Tigers till I die. If you're all these other leagues, shouldn't you maybe keep an eye on the PGA Tour and see how it does? Because it's the least amount of players being as close as they have to be. Whereas NHL, you've got 15, 20 guys sitting on a bench right next to each other. Basketball, same. Major League Baseball, you have a team of probably 60 guys when you add in bullpen, rotation, you know, all these guys. Shouldn't you maybe see if, like, the PGA Tour does okay for a month or two and then say, okay, maybe it is safe to start going again instead of setting these dates of, oh, we're going to start playing in, like, the first week of July?
Well, that would be the conservative approach to play it safe and protect your players. So, of course, they're not going to do it. to play devil's advocate for a second, and I don't agree with this point, but maybe this is their thinking. A second wave's coming at some point, and there's been some talks that some of these leagues want to try and finish their seasons before we hit it, because when it hits again, if we don't have a vaccine, which we likely won't, it's going to be like starting over. It's going to be March again, which will then shut you down for another 3 months at least. So a lot of them are trying to complete now, and some of that is half-assed plans to get it back. Some of them, like the NBA coming back, it means we're going to house everyone in one little bubble and create a little viral brush fire and hope it doesn't catch, which is terrifying. But to answer your point, yeah, golf seems primed to be the safe one to do it, because using your own balls, using your own club, right, pretty easy to distance, right? We've talked about you two not even being within the same zip code hitting the ball with each other. So you could do it that way and see what the possible best case for transmission between the athletes would be and understand that. But money and timing just isn't going to let these leagues do it, even if it should.
Fair enough, Jay. I mean, kind of the same opinion. Maybe major leagues should start paying attention to, let's see how we do increments instead of saying, hey, let's get 100 guys into a stadium together and hope no one gets sick.
I guarantee you the Illiches are looking at a way to put 500 people in Little Caesars Arena as quickly as they can right now. Even though they're not going to be a part of any kind of playoff, they'll still find a way to sell 500 tickets for that place. The point being, Russ touched on it, on the money aspect of it. PGA is not even in the top 10 in terms of value of its industry, in terms of the Professional Golf Association. NFL, MLB, NLB, a bunch of soccer leagues, and then you've got NHL sitting at 6. It's about the money. These are big industries that make big dollars, and basically they're probably crippling. Like, yeah, they don't have advertising and marketing and all this stuff. They all got bills to pay just like any other ordinary human being. They just have a bunch of zeros at the end of their expenses and their income. Those leagues need money to pass in and out of it immediately, and I just think they're going to do whatever the hell they're going to do to get money, and it's going to be capitalism instead of doing the smart thing, which would be watching the safest sport get played to figure out how to protect people.
I agree with you both. I mean, this is one of those things where, if, like Russ said to begin with, it's the logical, smart way to go about it. So, of course, none of the money grubbers are going to even consider it. And we're gonna have problems. I guarantee you there's going to be a tiny backslide in one of these. I don't wish it. I hope it doesn't happen. But let's be honest, they're stupid. They're going to do stupid things.
Pittsburgh just had a player
test positive
this week.
Yeah.
The players aren't together yet.
And he's in the starting lineup tomorrow night. No, it's really, it is how it is. Well, before we move on, because we're going to talk hockey, got a lot of hockey to talk about, NBA and all that. I want to ask Jay real quick, because as the other resident golfer on this, with everything returning next week, my big question is, do you see these upcoming fields as no big names because they're not really going to risk it? They're the ones that aren't really hurting for money. Or are you going to potentially see all these guys like Dustin Johnson, Phil Mickelson, Justin Thomas, who all want to play and haven't played in a competitive setting, saying, sign me up. I don't care if it's the, you know, I don't know the name of this tournament in the middle of bumfuck nowhere. I want to play.
First of all, I hope that's a real city because I would travel to bumfuck nowhere. number two, yeah, they better. I mean, if they can leave their house knowing that they can come back and not infect anyone in their family because they have all the protections in place, I'd hit every single amateur stop on the road, no matter if it's some, you know, podunk country club or a city park or whatever. Like, you're going to go play. I'd love to see all those athletes go out there and do that. Probably not the amenities that they're used to, but if you do it safely, go play golf.
All right.
What else are you going
to
do?
And lastly, this is my one for Russ, just to get him tied in. Since there cannot be fans on the courses when this is all happening, should the PGA, to draw in those viewers like yourself who probably wouldn't watch it on a given week anyway, but you're already going to have everybody watching from the that are golf fans like Jay and I, why not try to get everybody else? Should they mic up the players or the caddies to try to get that match feeling that they've had the last couple weeks?
Sure. I mean, it's probably not going to be enough to pull a not even casual fan like myself into it, but it's something. You're trying, right, yeah. Which is good. You're working with what you have. Stay with me. If we set up like American Gladiator turrets and we shoot foam balls at them while they're playing, then I'd watch. It'd be fun.
So you watched Holy Moly last week. Okay, there you go. I actually didn't watch it, but our very good friend who we're sad to not have this week, Dio Pauly Rowe, was texting me during it saying, are you watching this right now? And I'm like, I'm not. I'm going to watch the replay, I promise, but it is a great show. I do enjoy it. So we'll see what happens with all that. If you listen to this show, any major league owner of a baseball team, basketball, football team, listen to us. We're trying to tell you, wait a little bit. The money's not going to go anywhere. It still will be there whether you play a game next week or you play a game next year. So, and trust me, if it takes that long, you're going to be able to demand a king's ransom for a ticket because people are going to be dying to see live sports. Really. All right, moving on. This one should be fun. Going to go through now that the season is officially over. They are not going to have any more regular season games. The 2019-2020 NHL season, and we're going to give out the awards. Who gets what? I said it in the text thread. You can call this the 2020 NHL Awards, or you can just call this the Bruins team dinner, because there's a lot of Boston Bruins in this, if you did it right. So, Jay, I'm going to let you go first here. The Rocket Richard Award goes to...
I almost don't want to give it to Pasternak, just because I know the Boston Bruins are going to take a lot of pieces of hardware home. I'm going to go Ovi. He just had a son. He's got kids. We're going with Rocket Richard, right?
Mm-hmm.
Russ is giving me a look. What's going on? Did I mess him up already?
We're all aware that this was already awarded, right?
No, didn't know they did the awards yet.
Yeah. For the four that are calculated mathematically based on cold hard numbers and not voting, it's already done.
Oh, okay.
They're being strived. Rocket Richard, Art Ross, President's Trophy, Williams Jennings.
Well, I knew the president. I knew the president's trophy was. I did not know the Williams Jennings or the Art Ross were.
Yeah.
Well, I probably got them right then. So.
Yeah. I hope so.
No. I went off that list Jay gave me, so there were still options in that list. So.
Yeah, that was an article from March.
Well, that's fine. He can use it.
Oh my God! Look at me go.
I don't care. I have no problem with it. I'm giving it to Ovi too. So fuck whoever got this award, because I gave it to Ovi.
Good news. Ovi and Pasta tied, and they both get it.
Oh, okay, good. We're fine. We're good. All right, well, tell you what. Let's change this up a little bit. Russ, Jay and I are going to tell you who we gave the other three awards to. You tell us how we did. For the Art Ross Award, there was no other option. I gave it to Dreisaitl, and I'm assuming he got it, because the guy had 110 points at the end of the suspended season.
Well, Justin, would you like to take a guess at what factually already happened?
No, because we already know.
It was, in fact, Dreisaitl, because 110 is higher than any other number that was scored.
Oh, my God.
So good job.
All right, well, to make this easy, did the Boston Bruins and the Boston Bruins get the William Jennings and the President's Trophy? Okay, good. There we go. Well, forget this segment. It went horribly.
There's more trophies.
Yeah, I know there are. We're still going to try. Oh, God. Thank the Lord for an edit button. So the 2020... No, I'm just kidding. All right, moving on.
Oh, my God.
Let's move on. Let's move on to trophies that weren't mathematically decided already.
I love how two-thirds of us still fucked this up.
We made it work. Like I told you, I've been out of the loop, man. I really have been out of the loop. All right, here we go. Well, then, Russ, contribute to the conversation. Who did you have winning the Vezina?
Oh, Vezina, I had Connor Hellebuyck. Okay. Plays for a dogshit Winnipeg defense, but somehow was one of the best goalies in the league. So he did more with less. Top goals above replacement, top wins above replacement for a goalie. Herculean effort on his behalf. I'm giving it to Connor Hellebuyck.
Connor Hellebuyck. I gave it to Connor Hellebuyck as well. So, Jay, over to you.
So one quick question, now that we're going to go through the non-automatic winners, right? We're taking it as of stats, no matter what. That was the year. This is the ending stats. This is how we try to calculate. Okay.
They played a season regardless. Yeah, they played a season regardless, so you're good.
All right. That sucks, because I would love to give it to Vasilevskiy, even though he had a very terrible start on the year. He was heating up. Him and Merzlikins, I only know this because my fantasy squad, were just raking in shutouts like none other.
Good for you.
It was really good for me, fellas. I would go with Vassy. He did have a slow start, but that's probably good because Tampa needed to go deeper into the playoffs, which are now the summer edition playoffs. Good try. Good luck selling that. Vassy's my pick.
Okay.
Blabbering with unfactual information, which is confusing the general public.
eat it.
That could be used for just Jay and I starting this segment, though. So.
Fair.
Okay, so Hollebuck, Vasilevsky, I like it. Jay, right back to you, the Lady Bing trophy. Who'd that go to?
Lady Bing, I am going to go with Nathan MacKinnon. I really like what Avalanche is cooking with this year. I was going to pick them to win the Cup if we got to that magical moment in April. We got to pick teams. Colorado is just loaded with young talent, and Nathan MacKinnon's the center of that team, and he's worthy of the Lady Bing.
Okay. Ross?
I think that's a good pick. I went with Pettersson, though. I went the other way. Well, I was debating between the two. In the last 5 years, only 7 players have drawn more than 30 penalties but taken less than 10. Peterson's the only one to do it this year. Barkov did it last year. Barkov won the Lady Bing last year. So I'm going with Petey.
Okay, absolutely. I'm with Jay on this. I took Nathan MacKinnon as well. That's a heck of a team. And it's going to tie right perfectly into my next one for GM of the Year. I went with Joe Sakic because fuck Ken Holland. You don't spend 30 years not giving a shit and then move to a team that's just as bad and decide to start giving a shit. So, Jay, ancient site you sent us from 2007 had Ken Holland winning it, and I just chose no on that. So I'm going to go with Joe Sakic. Jay, over to you.
I mean, GM of the Year is hard to do when you don't have a full year to look at, to be quite honest with you. I mean, you've got Dave Poley in Nashville. He's always talked about in that conversation. I don't really know. I feel like you can't award that award to anybody without the end result. Like, what did all that hard work lead up to? Like, Ken Holland, he was probably destined for a first-round exit, to be honest. So he probably shouldn't get it for that reason. I don't know. I don't know how to do that one, to be honest with you. I'm going to leave it empty.
Okay, absolutely. Russ?
I'm actually going to give you an answer.
Good, thanks. Appreciate it.
I'm also going with Joe Sakic for reasons that will be very obvious as we proceed here. I hate it, but Colorado's put together something really special there, and most of it is homegrown. But Sakic also just cobbled together a third line out of nowhere this offseason, basically picked him up for free with a couple trades, Donskoy, Nichushkin, and they're paying off immediately. That's some boss-ass GM shit, and I hate giving it to Sakic, but he's earned it.
Yeah. No, he definitely has. Definitely has. Coming right back to you, Russ, the Jack Adams Award. Obviously, according to Jay, we didn't really finish the year. You didn't get to see them coach all the way through. But if you had to pick one who did all right as far as we got, who are you taking?
Tortorella.
Yeah.
Because Columbus died this year.
Mm-hmm.
They were supposed to be awful. Then they weren't. And then everyone got hurt. And they kept limping along. Every single reason for this to be a bad, bad team, a lottery team. And now they're a couple games away from being in the playoffs. And that shouldn't be the case. But it is. So I'm going to give it to Tortorella.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, no, that team got stripped for body parts. Shouldn't have done anything. Shouldn't. And Torts was, somehow made it work. So I am taking Tortorella as well, Jay.
I'm going to go off the beaten path, and I'm going to go with one Barry Trotz.
Barry Trotz.
Still recovering from losing Tavares to free agency. And everything that they've done with Barzal, their goaltending shuffle that seems to always been a nightmare, they actually got better on defense as a team. Winger-wise, I couldn't. Anders Lee, that's all I got right now off the top of my dome. So they have some missing parts, but they're still above 500, even losing their best asset 2 years in a row. So I like Barry Trotz. And he looks like an egg. I like eggs.
He does look like an egg.
All right, you heard it here. Jay likes the Trotz. So that's cool. It's good with me. Coming right back to it, Jay, the Selke Trophy. This one hasn't been decided according to Russ, so we're going to let you decide it right now.
So from that, ancient website I sent out, they had Sean Couturier on that, and that was the one that I stopped. I was like, what? Like, I would never even have picked him for that. I like their other options they have in here with Patrice Bergeron as well, even though I'm starting to think that this article comes from Boston Mass itself, too.
It does. It does.
It was written by the Boston Globe, Jay. What did you expect?
Well, I'm really tanking this segment. Sorry, boys. Let you down. I'm going to go with Sean Couturier, so it's not Boston.
I went with Bergie, so let's just get this out of the way, Russ.
I gave it to Couturier. Okay. He's really transformed his game. Third best Corsi differential in the league. Pretty damn good.
All right, all right. Moving on to the Calder Trophy, Russ. Where'd you go with this one?
Colorado, part of the Sakic reasoning. Yeah. Cal McCarr. Took him. It was between him and Quinn Hughes, really, but I gave it to McCarr because I just think he's doing more, and he forced his way onto the top power play, beating out Sam Girard. Quinn Hughes didn't really have any competition. That is a garbage for depth team, and he went in. He's doing great, but I think McCarr's done a little more.
Okay, I'm sick of people Brett Farving their name. That is Kale Maker, if I've ever read it that way, and that's what it will be in my answer, because I picked the same person, 50 points in 57 games. Kale is the winner. Kale Maker, not McCarr, whatever you want to do. It's Favre. I mean, it's Favre, not Favre. Pronounce your name like you spell your name, okay? Key and Peele got it right. You say your name right. You say it right.
That was a Don Cherry rant if I've ever heard one.
Oh, my God. Just say your name.
That was not a compliment.
Say your name right. Jay, over to you.
I can speak now, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
I also like Cal McCarr, but more importantly, because Tyson Barry lost his job to him, and Tyson Barry went to Toronto. And when you're Tyson Barry was a great prospect for Colorado, and they moved away from him, and they entered in Cal Maker, and I'm going with Cal McCarr.
Cal McCarr, all right, all day. And on to my favorite trophy. The Norris Trophy.
We do love this one.
I love this trophy, man. I really do. The Norris Trophy. I awarded it to Nick Lindstrom for the 20th season in a row. Nick Lindstrom won the Norris Trophy. Yeah, he's so good. He doesn't even have to be on the ice. It's just I gave it to John Carlson. I didn't really like anyone else, and I'm upset that I can't give it to Nick Lindstrom. So Russ, over to you. Norris Trophy goes to.
Put on this Nashville hat real quick.
I kind of figured that's the way you were going to go.
Yeah. Roman Josi, transition monster, fourth best Corsi differential in the league, and really carrying that Nashville team that's getting killed for depth and effective goaltending. He's doing great. He's doing so good. He's unheralded. John Carlson's got all the points. Roman Josi has all the underlying good play, so I'll lean that way.
All right, Jay, over to you.
Which is shocking because no one else can score on Nashville, so you'd think that Josi would be the one
exactly.
to do it for them.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I am going to go with John Carlson because he literally started the year on fire for Washington, and if he could have carried that on through the playoffs, we could have seen Ovi dancing in fountains and all kinds of fun things inside cities, and that's what I need. So, but I'm going to go John Carlson purely on the points. I'll be very transparent about it. He was wrecking them up.
I would give anything to watch Alexander Ovechkin drunk floating in a fountain or sleeping with the Stanley Cup and telling his wife to go lay on the couch because the cup belonged with him. That dude deserves a million more Stanley Cups, and I'm hoping he'll be able to get another one. All right. This next award has a little bit of sentimental value. He's a hometown hero for all of us. Love talking about him. The Ted Lindsay Award, Jay. Who are you going to give it to? Who is deserving of Terrible Ted's Award this year?
Most outstanding player in the National Hockey League has to be Connor McDavid. There's Connor McDavid made Leon Draisaitl. Russ and I were chatting about this before we started. This is like Brady and Belichick, but there's more proof that one of them is the cemented pillar that makes the other one hold water as well. So. Connor McDavid, hands down, feet up in the air, feet on the ice. This guy's fast as hell, and I love him. Like, I want to have, like, a three-way with both of them.
Connor McDavid all day. I went same place as you did, Connor McDavid. It wasn't really that hard of a pick. Russ, if you could find another person, I'd be very interested to hear what you have to say. I see you nodding your head no, so I'm just going to let you confirm. Your pick is?
Yep, clean sweep, Connor McDavid.
Clean sweep, wasn't that hard. All right, well, coming right back to you, the Hart Trophy. Russ, is it staying in the same place, but maybe with someone else?
I both hate and love this trophy because it is one of the most asinine assignments every single year. Quick little trends. Only four times ever in the league has a player won this and his team not made the playoffs.
Okay,
so that's locked Ooh. In. Post-lockout, with only two exceptions, the winner has either had the most goals, the most points, or both.
Okay.
And then 10 of the last 14 times, player has been in the Eastern Conference, because the writers can't stay up past 10 p.m. apparently and only watch East Coast teams, which is infuriating. So all of this is to say it's probably Pasta's trophy to lose. Dreisaitl's the odds-on favorite. I think him and McDavid cannibalize each other's value if we're talking about most valuable player. Personally, I'm giving it to MacKinnon. Had to go without Rantanen for a large chunk of the season. Best Corsi differential, best expected goal differential out of all the expected finalists. Dude's super good. And I'm hating how much I'm loving Colorado. But I'd vote MacKinnon.
MacKinnon's a great pick. It really is. Jay, stop picking your beard. Sit up straight. Give me your answer. Who are you taking for the Hart Trophy?
You can't make me do that. You can go team by team and really look at a lot of different players and what they did for their team. Like, I can look at the Kachucks. The points aren't there, but, like, they are the heart of both of their teams for Ottawa and Calgary. I wish goalies – I don't know, goalies can't get this because they get the Vezina and the Jennings, right?
No, they can get it, but Carey Price is the only one in modern history who has.
Seriously, because it feels like they'll never give it to a goalie. I mean, like, if play this out. Columbus goes on into eternity and wins the Cup. Pick one of their goalies. Like, they were carrying the load for a long time. I'm going to stay in Edmonton, and I'm going to go with Connor McDavid again. I think he is a constant reminder of a talented player who's going to excel, and he's my guy. Like, I want to have, like, a three-way with both of them.
I'm going to play that every time you mention that man's name. I just want you to know that.
And then Connor McDavid won the rest of the awards.
Oh, you didn't say it. Okay, that's fine. let me hear this right. So basically, the Hart is kind of like the Heisman. They just don't want to give it to a certain position. Is that what I'm hearing?
Kinda. It's like the Heisman in the way that it's got so many weird stipulations and reverence around it that they're like, "Oh, you can't win it if you don't do this," right? Like. Yeah. It's got a lot of that behind it for some reason. I don't know, for old white dudes to argue about shit.
Well, because I'm thinking about it in that way. Since we have been old enough to pay attention, I feel like Sue and Chase Young might have been the only two modern defensive players that were ever even in the Heisman conversation. If you're not a quarterback,
correct,
running back, or wide receiver, they don't even pay attention to you. So, okay, I like
it. Yeah, if you're not a quarterback or running back. I think it's only been a quarterback or running back have won each of the last 15 Heismans.
You just
don't get a chance.
The last time I remember seeing a wide receiver even at the finals was Randy Moss. And I think that might have been the year Woodson beat out Peyton Manning for the Heisman. So it doesn't. Yeah, you pretty much got to be in the backfield to touch the Heisman, apparently. I stayed with Jay. I decided to just make it a broad decision, though. I went with the Edmonton Oilers dynamic duo. Either of them could win it. Totally fine with me. But I will say, I didn't even think about it till Russ mentioned it. I do like MacKinnon for this, too. He definitely would be a guy that I would consider as well. Partly for that reason, that they just play too late, and it's, you know, a bunch of old people past their bedtime, so they have to watch the Rangers and then go to bed. All right, moving on. Okay, Jay, let's hit mute.
I did. I'm fucking up all over the place.
I was like, cool, we got transition sound effects.
Yeah, apparently I found a way to transition things without touching a button. All right, moving on. Jay, you're probably very excited about this because over the last couple months, you found a newfound, appreciation for the NBA. And guess what? They've decided we're coming back. We're going to play, but we're going to do it in the most backwards, asinine, doesn't make sense to me whatsoever way. And that is, we're going to finish the season, but not everybody's going to finish the season. And we're going to add some weird numbers to it let me put it this way. The East has 13 teams eligible. The East has 9. The West has 13 eligible. I want to get your guys' opinion on the format, but before I do that, Russ, I just want you to explain to me, why the hell can't they just do the play-in tournament for the remaining few people and have their top eights on both sides? Why do we need to finish the season?
I think it's because, well, the same thing that the NHL struggled with, that they didn't want teams with higher seeds coming in cold. They wanted to put him on an equal footing, equal number of games to come in and have his chance, so they're not at a disadvantage for having a higher seed. Plus the whole, oh, we didn't finish the season, how do we decide seeding, which is a not as big of an issue as they're making it out to be.
Absolutely.
But I think that's why they're making everyone play.
Okay, that's fair. And I guess now the long walk to get back to it, your thoughts on the format of what they're doing here. Is it the right way to go about it? Was there another way that made a little more sense to you kind of thing?
I think eight's too many games, but I like this format better than the NHL for the simple fact that in the NHL, Boston was 6 points up on the next closest team in the entire league, 8 points on the conference, which you cannot eclipse in three games, right? It's mathematically impossible for Tampa Bay to pass Boston. Now, however, in those three games, Boston can win the President's Trophy and be the fourth seed, which obviously has never happened before because it's ridiculous. The NBA is avoiding that altogether. By their eight-game tournament, it builds off of the regular season points instead of negating them altogether. So I like that part of it. I like that the regular season still matters, and it's not so easy to just leapfrog teams. I also like that we're going to have to stagger start times. We're going to have basketball from noon to midnight every night.
Yeah.
So that's going to be kind of fun. But I don't like the condensed schedule. I don't like that they're all in one spot. You're asking for an outbreak to take everybody out.
Absolutely.
And there's a very real chance that's going to happen. Because they're all in Orlando. News point, Florida, still rising in cases. So we're going to go to a place that does not have it under control. We're going to put everybody there, and we're going to have them passing in and out of the same place multiple times a day. It's a viral brush fire, and it's waiting to go off. So I think that's asinine. But I think they figured out how to finish their regular season better than the NHL did.
Okay, I like it. I like it. Jay, over to you. I mean, you're now the resident NBA expert here. You're just eating up everything we give you.
Oh, far from it.
But I'm asking you, Jay or Russ did just mention something that I think if of anyone who's excited to watch basketball, you would be, that we're going to have basketball for basically 12 hours straight. We're going to get noon to midnight. And I want to know your opinion on this format and how they're going to go about it, but I want to ask you, can your DVR handle that much recorded basketball at one time?
I don't know how many gigabytes Hulu gives me, but we're about to find out as a group. I am excited. Like, just as it's magical to go to Disney World, because that's where the teams are going to play, I'm going on my first date, okay? this is first date territory with the NBA. We're going to do it together. So I'm going to learn some things. I don't like the way she's dressed up with this unbalanced amount of teams from conferences, but we'll see, you know, maybe there's a wardrobe change later. I don't know. I'm excited. It's basketball. I like that there's only going to be one draft lottery as well. They're going to have the six teams or the eight teams that don't make it and the six that don't qualify. Okay, there's the draft. Go home. You're done. Like, there's not this, you know, what the NHL is doing effectively. So it's a little cleaner. I'm going on my first date, so I got to get ready for this, and I'm pretty excited to watch basketball.
Leave it up to Jay to, like, sexualize a sports league. Like,
I mean, yeah, that's on brand.
So if you watch every game in one night, did you go all the way then? I mean, is that what we're talking about here?
Multiple.
Oh, God. Okay. My
That'd be great.
My follow-up to that, and I don't know if you guys have read through all this yet or not, so I'm gonna read it as if you haven't and get opinions here. I need someone to explain this eighth seed tiebreaker to me because I don't get it.
I got you.
It reads like stereo instructions. So from what I've read, if the team with the eighth best record is in its conference is more than four games ahead of the team with the ninth best record in that same conference, no play-in tournament. So basically, I don't know, let's just say like Milwaukee goes as a four-game lead on whatever team you want to tell me, Chicago. You're saying that there's no way for Chicago to advance. Milwaukee's a guaranteed eighth seed in, correct?
That's after the eight games they play.
Yes. But if they're not, if there's a three-game separation, so even if Milwaukee finishes 4-3 4-4. They could still technically not make the playoffs if they're the other team's four games back.
Well, it's more than just the eight games. It's the regular season record.
Okay.
Right. Plus these eight games. If the 8-9 team are within four games of each other, then they're deemed too close to call. And we go into a separate play-in tournament where it is, and this is fascinating and a little complicated. The eight seed has to lose two games, and the 9 team can only lose one game. And you play basically a best of two games to decide who moves on. So, yeah, if the 8 and the 9 seed at the end of this eight-game thing, you add it to the regular season, and they're within three games of each other, say, they play this, and we play one game, maybe we play two games, you don't know. This is by far the weirdest part of the whole thing. I don't know. I can't fathom why we did a regular season. We're doing eight more, and then they go, I don't know. We might have to check this out again. Like, no, that's why we're playing eight more games to decide this before that. But yes, you're right. There would be a play-in game at that four-game cutoff for some reason.
I have a feeling when this is all said and done, these teams are literally just going to be like the team that wins, they're going to be on cloud nine. Everyone else is going to be like, yeah, but this wasn't our normal deal, so fuck off. Like, it's going to be like this, like, backhanded, like, but really, was it a championship? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Well, I can't wait for the confusion that we get an 8-9 playoff. The 8 team loses the first game, and the fans from the 9 team freak out, thinking, yeah, we moved on, we're in the playoffs. And no, you're not, and they lose the next night. It's just heartbroken.
My message to the NBA, the NHL, and probably Major League Baseball, once Major League Baseball starts giving us their layout, this is my message to all three of you. I miss you, I love you, but
if everything you're doing is bad, I want you to know this.
Everything you're doing is bad. It's all bad. There's no good in what you're doing. You're bringing us back sports. Yay, you're going to kill everyone by making 200 basketball players get coronavirus while they're riding Space Mountain. This is ridiculous.
Can you imagine MLB fighting over dollars and time playing in a sport right now just to come up with the plan just for it to be shut down by Corona again? Like, they're so worried about money.
They don't even get started on this prorate they want to do. It's ridiculous. Just pay them. Listen, Jay says it all the time.
Pay that man his money.
Give the dude his money, okay? You don't care. You're not hurting for it. Oh, my God. All right, anyway, let's move on. Jay, what I wanted to ask you about, because we just had Russ explain the playoff tiebreaker thing, and I don't want to do it again. My head will start hurting. It was proposed early on. It didn't get picked up, but I heard a lot of comment on it. Against what they're doing now, would the idea of that just the top 16, whether it's West or East, make the playoffs, we'll play it that way? Would that have been a better way to go about it, because there is no confusing play-in and all that? It's just the top 16 teams, the best records, are going to play each other, and we'll get a champion that way, even though you run into that problem of you could potentially have a West versus West NBA Finals.
Yeah, it would be cleaner. I think the more you reduce the fabrication of a ending of a regular season, the easier it is to understand it. But, like, just sitting here and thinking about it, what if there's, like, yeah, there's some, like, plan and outline and how they're going to get where they're going to go. But what if they're doing it on purpose to test all the social distancing stuff they also have to implement? Like, all this stuff is a dry run before they start a playoffs and they can't finish it. Like, what if the coronavirus, like, hits the teams during these play-ins and then they call it quits? So, like, maybe they're just mitigating risk by doing it. But at the same time, like, the way I work in my real job, less is more. Like, the less you have to do, the more time you have for other shit. So just draw the line, start the playoffs. That's the easiest way, in my opinion. Who cares? Like, just go. But there's some reason. Maybe it's money. Maybe it's TV. Maybe it's advertising deals, making more money off of what they've already missed. I don't know. That's probably what they're trying to do. It can't be simple. There's too much money involved, and there's a lot of dumb people in the world.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. Russ, just that top 16, doesn't matter if you're on the West Coast, East Coast, you know, just give us the top 16 teams and we'll figure out a way to get you an NBA champion.
From a fun standpoint, I get it. From a starting over from scratch, I also get it. I like it. I don't like it in the fact that that's not what the team signed up for at the beginning of the year.
Absolutely.
And to change the rules this late, that's a little disingenuous, which sucks. But we're in unprecedented times, and if it happened, I wouldn't be upset. But I get it from that point that teams are working towards a certain way. It doesn't make sense to benefit or punish certain teams at a whim at the end. But I'd be fine jumping right into the playoffs or certainly not playing eight games.
I mean, I think you said it earlier. I get the eight games for the let's give everybody an equal amount of time to dust off the cobwebs. Because for teams like, in theory, the Lakers, the Bucks, those, these eight games don't mean shit. They're the number one teams on both sides. And for them, it's just warm-up games. It really is just let's get the cobwebs off. Let's get everything rolling again. We're good. That being said, the 16 game, like you said, for the startup, for just getting everything going again, top 16, regardless of where you're at, does sound awesome. Because for right now, I couldn't imagine something more entertaining than if they're all healthy, getting a Golden State Los Angeles Lakers NBA Finals. Yes, it's another year of LeBron against the Golden State Warriors, but it's a very loaded team on both sides, and it's probably the best two teams capable of playing. Go ahead.
Unfortunately, we can't have that this year.
Well, I'm saying if we took the top 16. Oh, that's true, I know. But if they're all healthy, it would have been very entertaining
if
on this top
healthy,
16.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they were tanking for, you know, whoever, I forget the guy's name, the guy from Memphis, James, I don't know his name, the big center from Memphis who just halfway, Winston.
James.
If you say Jameis Winston, I'm going to punch you. I can't remember his name. It is something, Winslow. So it's
Justice Winslow.
We know his name. We just can't think
drafted.
Of it. Yeah.
James Wiseman.
James Wiseman.
I was confusing him with Anthony Edwards.
Yeah.
No. Who's also a potential pick.
Wiseman. Yeah. He went to Memphis, all these NCAA problems. So he basically just said, all right, screw it. I'm just going to get ready to be the number one pick. I don't really care. So, yes, they were all tanking for that. But for that top 16 thing, it does really sound entertaining. But, yes, obviously we're not going to get it. And let's be honest, all this really is just a little bit of prep. In that, though, Russ, I would like to ask you this. We said those eight games are kind of tune-ups for most. But does this break and hiatus from play, does this level the odds? Everybody's been sitting. I mean, obviously people have been practicing when they can, but no one's got real momentum. Everybody's starting from scratch on a level playing field. The Lakers, like we said, the Lakers, the Bucks, they are the top seeds. They have the best players. You got to think they're still going to be there when it's over. But does this give those eight seeds, those seven seeds, kind of an equal advantage? Because now you get healthy rosters across the board, or as healthy as you can get. These guys who may have not been ready by playoff time are going to be ready now. Does this kind of level the playing field a little bit for us to say we have favorites, but not as favorited as they would have been?
I don't know that it affects the favorites or not, because if I remember the numbers right, the NBA has the lowest rate of underdogs winning in the first round of the playoffs. I think that's going to be very similar this year, because everyone gets a chance to get healthy. And like LeBron, who's played deep into the playoffs every year almost for the past forever, gives them a chance to heal up his old body, right? And guys like that, it gives them a chance. Yes, this is probably the closest thing to a sterile level ground just based on talent playoff that we're going to get in a while. I wonder if that doesn't favor the top teams more because they're 100% healthy finally.
Yes, they're 100% healthy. I understand that. But I'm also saying teams who managed that, like they were saying, just get to the playoffs. Let's get to the playoffs. So it gives us, you know, these big names chances are now would have already been deep into the playoffs slash almost over with the playoffs. But now we're just starting. These guys who we may have not had available until the second round have had time to recuperate, time to get healthy. And yes, it also has let Giannis, LeBron, these guys who have carried the load all the way through the season, get 2 months off to kind of relax, get back, you know, get into better shape and get going again. So, Jay, on that, you know, as Russ just said, does this level out the playing field, or does this kind of, all it really did was just give the big names a chance to gear up for another round?
It's going to be interesting. I didn't know that in the first round, underdogs are just
exactly that. Like, you're even under of an underdog. You're not going anywhere.
It doesn't
It'd
happen.
Be interesting to see if any of those teams can actually do it. I just think talent is talent and health, and health is health. So if everyone is healthy, talent will, you know, succeed over the health of other players. So I would still, you know, hitch my wagon to all the LeBrons out there. So
yeah, I don't remember the season exactly. And Russ, I don't know if you remember the year, but you might remember this. This was obviously a while back. I think we were in high school at this time. But the Dallas Mavericks were just favorite. They were a team that everybody thought, all right, this is their year. And they lost in the first round to the Golden State Warriors, who were barely in the playoffs. That's the last time I can remember a first-round knockout of any type. Other than that, if you're the favorite, you're getting through usually pretty easily. It's very rare that you see them slip. So, yeah, first-round knockouts are not very common. They really are not in the NBA. It's pretty easy to bet on. It really is. All right, so we'll see how that plays out. Obviously, we'll talk about it as it goes. We'll get Justin's week-by-week recap of the NBA because he's now so obsessed with it that I'm going to quiz him on every single game. I really
We're dating. I'm going to learn a lot.
I hope you're going to learn many, many things, my friend. I'm excited. Part of the reason is you're not a big NBA fan. We haven't really been able to talk NBA in this show because,
you know,
but now you like NBA. So until that fades away because you realize, you know, they're not all Michael Jordan, then we'll see what happens. We will.
First crush, grandma's name, first pet name, street name, get it on first date.
How are you going to get those things watching an NBA basketball game? I know.
Just wait. It's a first date. I'll find the equivalent of a first date, first pet name in the NBA.
I don't think we have Pierre Maguire calling basketball games, so we're not going to find out stuff like that.
All right, adults that are listening to this show, if you have children, let them listen to just this episode. I'm sorry I swore. Let them listen, and at the end, you tell them, this is your brain on drugs. This is your brain on drugs.
Jeez.
I would just like to...
You'd be like, give me the drugs.
Yeah, we're disclaimering for you, that's your brain on drugs. It really, and Justin doesn't do drugs. Something's with him today. It's just, is everything going okay? Is the gas on in your house or something?
Ooh, I should check that. I'm good.
I'm so scared. Okay. Lastly, going on to the best of topic. Now, I've had this one on the list for a while, but a text I sent you guys the other day just kind of helped reignite where I wanted to go with it, and that was that there's really nothing behind it. It was just kind of a speculation on a tweet that the Pistons had asked to be able to interview former Piston Tayshaun Prince for the open front office position. And I said, no, let's stick away from the past. We don't need former greats coming back here because all it does is just set up for disaster in that way of Russ. In my opinion, I feel that former big-name players for teams coming back to take front office jobs, 9 times out of 10 is going to lead to diminishing their legacy over extending their legacy past what it already is.
Yeah, I think you're right that it's more likely to diminish their legacy than enhance it. It's difficult. You know how hard it is to be a world-class athlete and also to be a world-class front office executive? Like, the amount of people that can do that, you're talking about a 1% of a 1%. This is, it's a play to nostalgia most of the time to install these guys. And if you want them as, like, a figurehead and you have an actual person who runs the business behind them and then does a lot of the moves, that can work out great because that's going to sell tickets and that's going to sell players. But I think you're right that a lot of time it doesn't work out. And if there's a gap of time there, this is my own little pet theory, if there's a gap of time where another generation of fans can come in, you have a chance to ruin the legacy of a great player. If it's immediate, then there's people remember, like, hey, I saw him play. He's really good. But if, like, the guy goes away for 10 years, comes back and is a GM for an entire generation, that's who he is to this fan base, right? We almost ran into that with Dumars, who was the president as long as he was a player. There's an entire generation of people that really only know him post going to work Pistons, and they have a poor opinion of him because it, even though this is a Hall of Fame player, this is a multiple Executive of the Year award winner, but because he was there for so long, he had a chance to, well, what's the Batman line? He lived long enough to see himself become the villain,
right? You live yourself long enough to become the villain, yep. No. Well, the first bullet point on my notes was just that. And I think our generation is the key example to that. We're probably, I mean, unless you were an avid NBA fan from the beginning, we're all just old enough to at least say we remember something about Joe Dumars from his playing career, whether it's old videos of the Bad Boys, his years playing in those ugly teal jerseys with Grant Hill. But we all remember enough of him to say we know who he was. Because, I mean, for all of us, we weren't old enough to say we can remember every Barry Sanders game. But we know enough about Barry Sanders that we know how great he truly was. And it's that in the way of Dumars. We know how truly great he was for what he did in his time. But our generation probably better remembers, because when we got into high school was when those going to work Pistons hit their stride. We kind of lived and died on them because they were the big thing in Detroit. So we were old enough to remember this one once great trade away a now great Piston, allow another one to go to a Eastern Conference rival in the Chicago Bulls, and then say bye to Rip Hamilton, release Tayshaun Prince. But, oh, wait, we're going to let Tayshaun, Ben, and Chauncey all come back when they're no longer useful to this team to just be figureheads. You're not going to play. You're barely going to play. You don't even get your old numbers back. We're just going to make you figureheads.
Forgot about that.
I mean, Ben Wallace wore 6 when he came back. It felt weird.
Yep.
So I agree with you on that. It is that thing of our generation, as much as we want to say we'll always remember number 4 for what he did on the court, we're going to remember him for the big mistakes he made in tearing, and notice I glazed over the worst one of all. He drafted Darko Milicic. Hall of Famer.
Doing victory cigars.
Hall of Famer Dwayne Wade, Hall of Famer Carmelo Anthony, Justin's favorite player in the world, the Bostrich, Chris Bosh, all sitting right there. We're going to take Darko Milicic, who's now a guy who already failed at UFC fighting in Serbia. So it's just not a great thing. Russ's face is great on that one.
Is that real?
Yeah, he a couple years after he left the league, he went back to like Serbia and became like a UFC fighter. And he was only in one fight, and I think he got knocked out with like a head kick. Someone got their foot 7 feet in the air and knocked him out.
He's a wild man. He went from being shit to shit again.
Yeah, shit from shit. He was just meant to be. And that's in Serbia. Like, so he probably is dead somewhere because a Serbian guy lost a lot of money and buried him somewhere with cement shoes. But Jay, over to you on this, because as a follow-up, it's a weird question because we don't want to believe it, but at the same time, we have to talk about it. Could Steve Yzerman effectively diminish his legacy in Detroit if for some strange reason he can't get this Wings team turned around? Not saying he gets fired. Not saying he gets fired. Not saying he gets, you know, leaves with such sadness. But if Yzerman's here for 10 years, and in those 10 years we never get back to even being a remotely dominant, and it, not saying we have to win 4 cups for this to work, but we at least have to be competitive. Can Yzerman's, I'm the captain, I'm the greatest center, you know, Detroit's ever seen, I'm one of the greatest players in NHL history, can it be diminished? Because a lot of people forget that Wayne Gretzky coached in the NHL and it didn't really work out that well for him.
No.
So,
played poorly.
Yeah, but he can still get away from that.
It shouldn't happen, though. Like that's why I have 2 answers. Personally, for me, like, if you go from being a bottle washer to being the chef, you better be qualified for both those jobs before you have it, and one shouldn't affect the other. So, like, for me, Yzerman as a hockey player and Yzerman as a GM are 2 different people. And, like, I could draw a line there and be like, you're great at this, and you might be good at this. Like, Chris Osgood was a decent goalie. He's a shitty broadcaster. It doesn't take away from his, you know, I'm surrounded by talent goaliness. Like, I as a person, I divide those 2 things up, and that's just where it lies. But most of the people do what most people do. They transition one to the other. And, oh, you were great at doing A, so now you better be great at doing B. And, like, Russ has a valid point between the generations. Depending on when you see A and B is now your opinion of that person. So it should be divided out. But most people are going to hold you accountable to your standard that you set before.
I know, but if you think about it this way, Yzerman retired in 06, correct? 06 was his last season, I believe.
I'll say
06. I don't think I'm that far off if I'm a year off. But all right, so Yzerman retired in 06. I don't remember the exact year, but Dumars retired late 90s. Came back.
99 was his last
99?
Year.
All right, so then he took over for the Pistons, I believe, 2 or 3 years later. So, because obviously he was around for the 03-04 championship because we drafted Darko.
Built that team, yeah.
Stevie stayed around for a couple years here in front office, kind of what felt like he was being groomed for the job and then realized probably wasn't going to get it as soon as he wanted it, left for Tampa. So we are running on that same trended timeline. Obviously, Stevie's is a little separated because he had success in Tampa. But you figure our generation will always remember him for what he did on the ice. Always and forever. But like Russ said, that gap generation, those kids that were born in 2000 who are now 20, they know what Yzerman did on the ice from the legend they've heard, but they're more going to know Yzerman for the front office because he's came back. They, like, same as us. We can't really remember Barry. We can't really remember Isaiah and Dumars, but we've seen enough and heard enough to remember what they were like. That's why I'm saying, like, it should be separate, and I think for our generation always will be separate, but we have to look to that next generation for that success because we say we're 2-3 years out, so most of these kids are going to be getting into bars by the time we're successful again.
Owning bars by the time the winds are successful again.
Yeah. And the name of our bar? Puzzles. That's the puzzle. I always liked that joke for some reason.
This guy.
But that's why I'm saying I think it's a little tougher because we're not that generation anymore that we can separate it. We're the generation that knows him for one thing. We'll know him for this as well, but we're going to know him predominantly for what he did as a player. It's weird to say. The generation we're referring to as the Pistons, we're our parents' generation. We're that generation now when it comes to
Ivy. Yeah, no, I get it.
And our kids will be our generation for Dumars. So that's why I'm saying it can very easily, I guess, Russ, you take this too, though. If Yzerman can't turn it around to the way we're expecting him to turn it around, 20 years from now, could we be having the conversation? Yeah, he was a great player. We'll always remember that, but we're never going to be able to forget the fact that he just kind of never did anything to help this team turn it around after being labeled the savior.
Right. I think his work in Tampa Bay will kind of mitigate that, and we'll be able to push some blame to Ken Holland for leaving it in disarray, and that'll be the narrative.
Yes.
But there's a very real chance that if this becomes the Dead Wings, the next era of the Dead Wings, and the next 10 years are just abysmal, yeah, there's a very real chance that there'll be an entire generation of fans that are just like, Steve Yzerman sucks. I don't think it'll be that way. It hurt to say. It hurt.
I hate asking this question. I really do, but it's a conversation.
Yeah, like my brother was born in 2003. He's never seen Yzerman play, right? But when he gets into college, by the time he gets out of college, if the Wings aren't good still, he's not going to have a good opinion of Steve Yzerman, no matter how much I scream at him about it.
Yeah.
He wouldn't, because he would have had no reason to in his lifetime. Oh, I hate thinking about that.
This is why we need Dr. Cox from Scrubs to put the Wings jersey on and say, sit down, son. I'm going to tell you why the Red Wings were the best team in sport. Like, I need that. Someone's got to teach the lesson. Someone's got to do it.
Whose jersey was he wearing?
Chelly's, because he was actually very, very, very good friends with Chris. The actor was very good friends with Chris Chelios at the time. Yep, no, I remember that. I did.
Very true.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Scrubs for many reasons, but Dr. Cox walking out in a Wings jersey and then getting mad and actually rolling up the sleeves of a Chris Chelios jersey does wonders for me. Does wonders. But no, and I hate asking that question. I really do, because I'm in that same category. I'm optimistic of saying I don't think we'll ever have to have that conversation 5, 10, however many years away. And I also don't want to believe that if we have 5 years of the Dead Wings that Yzerman would ever give up, because it doesn't strike me as that, because that's another conversation. Does Yzerman stick it out? If this team can't get turned around, you know he's going to have offers everywhere, or, you know, at other places. Heck, the guy could go just take over Team Canada, because he is Mr. Canada for the Olympics. So you want to believe he's here for, you know, through the highs and lows. And yeah, it is weird. It is tough. A little upset stomach.
I hate that question.
Yeah. Well, you're not going to like this one either then. final question here. No. I just want to see if either of you, and if you don't have anyone, you don't have anyone. It took me a minute to even remotely come close to one. Is there a player, past or present, you would rather just come to the fan nights, wave hi, you're a legend, yay, and just stay the hell out of the front office?
My answer would be most of them.
And I'm not talking about some guy that played like a year for the Pistons and still comes to the... I'm talking about a guy who, like, someone who contributed to these teams. Someone who maybe isn't like an all-time great, but he's great enough that we have the debates. Should his jersey be in the rafters? Is he really...
Ooh.
Well, you know what I mean, though? Like, those kind of
guys. I got one, though.
There were very big questions of should Rip, Chauncey, and Ben Wallace's jerseys be in the rafters. Some people were yay. A lot of people were nay on that, and it created a lot of a riff. But, Rush, you said you have one.
I do. It hurts a little to say. But here's the reality of a situation is Miguel Cabrera was a tremendous Tiger.
Yeah.
Kind of a garbage human being.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the stuff, the alleged domestic abuse, which might have been more than alleged, the alcoholism, he's the kind of guy that I think needs to get away from the game and go do some penance, take care of himself, work on himself as a human, get out of the spotlight. I'm uncomfortable with him now because of some of the stuff he's done off the field. It would be just fine if he kind of goes away after that.
I'm not going to lie. Miguel Cabrera was the first name that came to my mind
when
I was thinking about this. And I have nothing against Miguel Cabrera as a player. He's a Detroit Tigers legend. He helped us. He came here. He made us successful. Obviously, we did a very poor job building around him. We signed a lot of guys that were great that didn't end up being that great. We signed a designated
Edgar Renteria.
We signed a designated hitter who, guess what? He can't do anything for this team but hit. Because if he moves one way or the other, his knees break in half. I'm talking about you, Victor Martinez. I'm talking about you. We signed Prince Fielder, who had a freaking golf swing to hit home runs. The guy hit home runs from, like, his shins. Turns out he can never play baseball again because he can't turn his head. He just can't turn his head anymore. So a lot of very poor signings to build around and help him out. And then the other great player we have for him in the pitcher, Verlander, treat him terribly, send him to Houston where, guess what? He finally gets his ring. They cheated for the ring, but they got the ring. That was one for me. Jay, did you have anyone that if, you know, you'd just rather see him on fan night, see him for, like, former team appreciation and just say, that's all we want from you?
You know, there's a lot of Red Wings names I can throw in there because they're just middling talent that's, like, don't glorify mediocrity because that's all we've had recently. I never saw Jimmy Howard again. Not the end of the world. Like, it's just, like, this era of I go to hockey because it's, like, what should have been and is completely not. Like, there's nothing good to really hang your hat on ever since Datsyuk and Zetterberg left. And I forgot who was it. I don't think it was Yuri Fisher. Someone went with the Wings, but they were just an advisor. It was like the best title to be a part of a club outside of playing on the field. You're just an advisor. Like, I can handle that. But when they start like, this guy's got to go here now. We got to move him over here. Oh, he did this now. Stop it. None of that needs to happen. So I don't know. Cabrera's a good one. For the Wings, no one. Don't give me anyone else past what they did.
All right. Mine, and I'm going to have to explain this one. I know I am, but I figure I need to say it. Nick Lindstrom. I love the guy. Favorite player of all time. Absolutely fascinating. Big fan. You did what you needed to do. All you can do is hurt yourself coming here because this team is not going to turn around in enough time for you to win 5 cups in a row, become this, like, you know, I don't want him to have anything to do with the Red Wings front office. Even if he's Yzerman's, like, right-hand man, just stay in Sweden, raise your kids, enjoy your life, drink your Corona. You did what you needed to do. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. Love to meet you on fan night. I'm good.
I'm pretty sure he is already in the,
I don't
in
care.
The front office.
I don't think so.
Eric just fired him on a Friday.
Yeah, he's fucking fired. No, I don't care. but no, because honestly, Jay, you went to hockey. It's weird. I'm like of the three of us, I'm probably the least prone to hockey. But I couldn't really think of anyone in, you know, I mean, because when it comes to the NFL and the Lions, no one can be worse than who we've had already. I actually think it would be hysterical if Joey Harrington took a front office job and was successful here.
Oh, my God.
That's coming full circle over Matt Millen. But and that's the problem. A Lion, if you're a former Lions player who are any good, we burn bridges with you as fast as we can. Barry is finally coming back. Calvin will probably never come back. I would be astonished if he comes back for when we retire his number. because you know they will eventually. I would be surprised if he has anything glowing to say about the Lions when he goes into the Hall of Fame. Baseball, like Russ said, Cabrera is the first one you think of because a lot of these other guys were good enough in our generation were just rentals. They didn't stay long enough to really form bonds here. And the Pistons, I mean, you can list the names. Ben Wallace, Chauncey Billups, Rip Hamilton. Chauncey's got a successfully going NBA or ESPN career on the jump. Ben Wallace and Rip Hamilton don't seem to have any real interest in basketball anymore. So it does go right, goes to the NHL, because the NHL to me does seem like the one that has the fastest pipeline from bench to front office. Now, Russ, you had a grin on your face. Did you actually find out that Nick Lindstrom is in our front office in some way, shape, or form?
I wasn't trying. I know he was at one point. He might have stepped down.
I thought he was a scout. I thought they had him as like the scout for Sweden.
Yeah, he was scouting
in
Sweden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep him there. That's fine. Pipeline those guys. But yeah, we don't need you here. I would love to see you as often as I can in Detroit. Just make sure you have a number 5 jersey on and you're shaking people's hands. That's all I ask. I'm not trying to be mean. We all know how much I love the guy. But I'm not looking for that. I'm really not. I'm just not.
You don't want him to take over as the assistant director of player development from Dan Cleary?
No. Captain Scooter can stay as long as he wants, just because I know what it does to Justin.
Oh, my God, I forgot about Danny Boy.
Oh, Danny Boy, Danny
you
Boy.
You just broke my heart.
Well, let's end this train wreck while we still can. My thanks, as always, to Sergeant Salty, Dan Cleary's number one fan, Justin Marcus.
I just hired Glenn Denning to become the new head of HR. He's firing Glenn Denning, or he's firing Cleary tomorrow on his day off.
Oh,
I'm
God.
Off my game today. Boy.
No, no, you're fired on your day off.
It happens. It's happened, and it will happen again. Because we're taking tomorrow off, and Justin's getting fired. Russ Ivanek, the stat man, everything you do. Probably I can guarantee you the smartest one on this show today. Jay and I really dropped the bar, but we still love you being on, and you always make us sound a lot smarter than we really are.
It's always entertaining, guys. I will always give you that compliment. It is a blast to be on.
And as always, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That is one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.